Do you swear on the Constitution of the United States to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
This is Police Radio,
the voice of American law enforcement,
with your host, Randy Sutton.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement on the America Out Loud Network. I am your host, Randy Sutton. We have another great show for you today, featuring My View from the Blue, which is all about everything that's happening topically in law enforcement, and I have a great guest for you today as well. First of all, I would like to thank those who make this show possible, and that's JSD Protective Services, for all your security needs. Also, Warrior12.com, Warrior12.com for all your Blue Lives t-shirts, and of course, BlueLivesMatter.blue, the news and information website about everything involving law enforcement.
The Briefing Room, headlines, stories, and all that touches American law enforcement.
Let's take a walk into the briefing room where I'm going to give you my view from the blue. In this week's view from the blue, I've got to call out another city for their absolutely incredibly stupid methodology in how they are treating the crime problems in their city. This one is stunningly stupid and is going to have a profound effect on the community. It's the city of Providence, Rhode Island. Now, last week I talked about the city of Berkeley and their idiotic mayor and their city council and some of the antics that they played when it comes down to dealing with their police force. The city of Providence, believe it or not, has outshined the morons of the city of Berkeley with something that's even far more devastating to the law enforcement effort. They have created and passed unanimously. Now, I'm saying that unanimously with a great deal of incredible passion, because I cannot believe it, that every single person on this council is so idiotic that they would pass this thing. It's called the Community Safety Act, and it is anything but a Community Safety Act. It is virtually the end of proactive policing in the city of Providence. And the city of Providence is a fairly large community, and the police department has had their issues in the past with their leadership. And I'm going to talk about both the city council and also the police leadership of this community, because both of them are mind-boggling in a couple of the things I'm going to bring up. First of all, what is proactive policing? What does it mean? Proactive policing is where crime is solved. And what it means is that's when the good street cops, the guys who are out there doing the job, are out making lots of pedestrian stops, car stops, investigatory stops, and they're trying to find the criminals and put them in jail. That's what cops do. At least that's what cops want to do. What this Community Safety Act that the City Council in Providence has passed has virtually put an end to it. How have they done that? They have put rules and regulations in place, a law, not just rules and regulations as policy, but actual law. And here's some of the beautiful parts of this that they're going to make you go get your blood pressure meds. I got to go get mine when I read this, okay? So first of all, officers must immediately tell criminals why they were stopped. Now, at first glance, that may not sound so bad. Officers are required to tell people the reason that they're stopped. Like, sir, ma'am, I stopped you for speeding. The problem is that when officers are investigating a crime, they don't necessarily want to give that information because they're trying to get information without making people aware of what they are investigating. It's perfectly legal. But what this ordinance or community law has created is the basically taking that tool away from all of the Providence officers. So that's one. Now, here's another one. Passengers in cars cannot be asked for identification unless they are a suspect of a crime. This is mind-boggling. I can't tell you how many fugitives and how many wanted people I arrested during my police career who were sitting in the passenger seat or the back seat of a car. To limit and not allow a cop to even ask for identification is mind-numbing. Now, to be sure, there are constraints through court decisions about being able to force people to identify themselves, but simply to ask someone for their ID in a consensual way is legal, lawful, and sanctioned by the Supreme Court. These idiots on the City Council of Providence have taken that away. Now, how about this one? Sometimes I have to laugh. Suspects should be searched by somebody of the same gender identity. The same gender identity. So now, what does that mean? Do I, as a police officer, when I'm about to pat somebody down or search them, do I have to ask, now, sir or ma'am or whatever, who do you identify with? And then find someone. Does that mean I have to, like, have a transsexual officer on call? What is going on with these people? Oh, and then there's this sweetheart of a law. Police cannot identify people who look like they may be under 18 years of age. What? What are you talking about? You mean if someone is under 18 and I think that they may be a suspect in a crime, I can't ask them for their identification? What planet are these people listening to? Now, here's one of the other sweet parts of this. If officers forget to say both their name and badge number when they stop somebody, they can be sued. Holy Jesus, you got to be kidding me. It's one thing after another. And the final one that's another mind boggler is gang member protection. Yeah, you heard me right. Gang member protection. Police are not allowed to indicate the suspect may be a member of a criminal gang if they haven't first placed them on a, quote, official gang list. So here I've got a guy stopped who's got all kinds of tats that identify him as a gang member, MS-13 or whatever. And in the report or during my field interview card, I can't identify him as a gang member. Because if they're not on an official list, they can't be a gang member. This is like opening the door, inviting gangs to come to your town. Now, how the city of Providence elected these bozos is something I'll never know. But the damage that they're doing with this is going to be felt for years. For years. So that's one aspect of this. Then I want to touch on another one. So that's from the city council. These are the elected morons. How about the city police administration, who have now decided to throw out the background check standards for their police officers? Yes, you heard me correctly. They are now hiring police officers that would be unable to pass a background check at any other time or with any other police department. Now, it seems that there has been a number of officers who were hired in one of the last classes who were not able to pass the background check. The background investigators were smart enough to let the administration know that these people could not pass the background. So what did the administration do? They took away the ability for the background investigators to negate someone's hiring. And somehow they hired some relatives, including one who was a drug dealer. Yeah, that's right. They hired a drug dealer to become a police officer. And then I'm sure this was just a coincidence, but then there was a news story that came out that the police department had hired the most racially diverse class in its history. Now, we don't see a correlation here, do we? You know, here's the thing, my friends. Policing has gotten a bad rap for the last several years. And sometimes the officers who have been, shall we say, gotten into trouble, they deserved the term a bad apple, because they do exist. We have to face that. Well, everybody's not a Boy Scout out there. So how do you keep the barrel of apples as clean as possible? You hire the best people. You do testing. You do background checks. That's how you keep the barrel clean. If you already are hiring people who have criminal histories, histories of drug abuse, you're going to get such a lowering of standards that they are going to be the future bad apples. And then when they do something that is brings attention to the department in such a negative way, then the department and police in general are the ones that are going to get painted with the same broad brush. It's insanity. Now, I must say that this started under the Obama administration, just like much of the police problems did. The Department of Justice even suggested, much to the chagrin of real cops everywhere, that they lower the standards, adjust the standards, the hiring practices, in order to further the diversity of the police. So they're the ones that actually suggested, hey, listen, just because a guy, you know, was a drug dealer doesn't mean you can't hire him to be a policeman. And some of these very liberal cities took that as the carte blanche to say, hey, we'll just hire whoever we feel like hiring. This is going to be a real problem. Now, the fact that it happened in Providence, where this moronic Community Safety Act just went through, I don't know if that's coincidence or if that's just a symptom. But one thing's for sure, I'm sure as hell glad I don't live in Providence, Rhode Island. If you haven't figured it out already, I am the national spokesman for Blue Lives Matter. And the Blue Lives Matter website is where you want to go when you want information about everything about what's going on in the law enforcement world. BlueLivesMatter.blue. That's our website, BlueLivesMatter.blue. And that's where you can show your support to the American law enforcement officer for all your news and information about everything that's going on in law enforcement. The website that you want to go to is BlueLivesMatter.blue. And that is where the official website of Blue Lives Matter is. You will read articles written by cops and police supporters. You will find out everything that's going on in the law enforcement community. You can show your support by becoming a member of Blue Lives Matter. And there will always be additional opportunities and information that you will find entertaining and informative. BlueLivesMatter.blue. If you have security needs, that is, if your company needs security, we all need security, right? But if your company needs security or your business, the person you want to talk to is Doug Carter of JSD Protective Services. That's JSDProtectiveServices.com. Go check out their website. Now, I'm really impressed with their operation. I've met their folks. I've met Doug, and his commitment to the top training for these security officers is pretty impressive. These men and women that work for him are consummate security professionals, and they've got armed security. They do pretty much everything in the realm of security, which includes bodyguarding, private investigation, and they're all over the United States. So check them out, JSD Protective Services. Tell them Randy sent you. Also in my view from the blue, I've got to tell you about two incidents that took place in two different parts of the country within days of each other that reveal and reflect something that is exceedingly dangerous, not only to the law enforcement community, but to Americans everywhere. The first incident I'm going to talk about happened in Davis, California. Now, there is a college there, University of California at Davis, and this happened very close to that campus. There were three police officers together in a vehicle in uniform, and one was in uniform, the other had their badges and their identification out. And there was a community event that takes place every year, and it brings in a lot of people. And apparently, it's a major business kind of thing that goes on, and so they bring in additional personnel. It's called Picnic Day, and it's called Picnic Day at UC Davis. But these were actual Davis City Police officers. And as they were driving down the street, they were in an unmarked police vehicle. They encountered a large group of people in the roadway blocking traffic. So one officer who was in uniform and two who were in plain clothes but with their badges displayed and their weapons visible, they stopped to investigate. And traffic basically was gridlocked. So these officers got out to take action. And they were suddenly surrounded by a hostile group of individuals. And they began yelling threats at the officers. One person pretended he was pulling a gun. Now, as the officers got out of the car, they identified themselves. Two of them were attacked by a group and beaten to the ground. The police reported that the officers were kicked, punched in the head. One officer was struck in the side of the head with a bottle. And as they were being assaulted, one of the officers could see people in the crowd taking videos of this attack. And the officers, literally were in a fight for their life. They had to call for help. And eventually, once help got there, there were several arrests made. All of these officers were injured, every single one of them. All of them were hospitalized because of this group of mob mentality people who felt that they had the not only the ability to attack law enforcement without fear of consequences, but also the blatant disregard for caring about human life. This is frightening stuff. Now, I know from past experience that when mob mentality takes over, it's really, really dangerous. But this is a really bad sign. And then, just 2 days later, another incident that involved five Taylor, Michigan police officers took place. And once again, this was an event. It was called a carnival. And there had been reports of fights taking place. And according to the press, they were teenagers, yeah. And when the police got there, they were attacked by a mob. And it included both males and females, and the multiple fights took place. These officers literally had to fight for their lives. All of them were injured. One of them is going to be out of work for weeks because he sustained such devastating injuries. And several teenagers, according to the media, teenagers were arrested and taken into custody. They were from different towns, but this is something that I find very, very dangerous when it comes to a trend that is developing. These, quote, teens were not afraid of the police. They weren't afraid of the consequences. They weren't afraid of attacking law enforcement and dealing with any type of consequences to it. We should all be afraid of this, because when this type of mob mentality takes place, it can lead to mayhem, it can lead to murder, and it certainly can lead to a degrading of the American way of life. I don't know what we're going to do about it. I know what we should do. I know that in days gone past, many of these attacks didn't happen because they knew that there was going to be consequences. You see, there's no fear of police anymore. There isn't any fear of us. And, you know, maybe this is going to be a politically incorrect statement, but there should be fear. There should be fear that if you put your hands on a cop, you're A, going to jail, and B, that cop isn't going to treat you with kid gloves. You lay your hands on me, you try to hurt me, and I'm going to hurt you back. That's the way it should be. And unfortunately, the way law enforcement has been treated and degraded by the media and by much of the political process that has taken place in the last few years, cops are scared to death to put their hands on people. We've got to change this. If not, more cops will get hurt and more cops will die. And that, my friends, is my view from the blue. If this was television and you could see me right now, you know that I'd be wearing a Warrior 12 t-shirt. And you're asking yourself, what the hell is a Warrior 12 t-shirt? That is, unless you've been listening to this show for a while. Then you would know that they are the coolest police t-shirts around. Warrior 12 is the clothing line for Blue Lives Matter. So we got the Blue Lives Matter t-shirts. We have all kinds of other different logos and sayings on them. And they are very, very cool. So go to warrior12.com. That's warrior12.com. You could check out the entire line and wear some pretty cool shirts.
We are excited indeed to be celebrating our one-year anniversary here at America Out Loud. And we could not have done it without you. Well, in short order, we've become one of the fastest-growing podcast and talk radio networks in the world. For all the latest news, entertainment, your blogging, and now web TV, as we celebrate our one-year anniversary here, and we'll see you back at AmericaOutLoud.com. Well, I'm not sure why we take our health for granted, but I know that many of us do, include me in that company. Recently, I had a couple of health scares that got my attention real quick. I started a new product called Healthy Cell. I took it for about 3 weeks, and man, I started to feel really good. I found myself sleeping better at night, had more energy in the day, and less stress and anxieties, and just feeling better overall. Well, with those kind of results, I knew I had to do something, so I reached to the company directly with a request to bring Healthy Cell back to America Out Loud, and here it is. Well, typically you'd pay $110 plus shipping and handling. Well, now you get it for just $79.99 for the monthly plan, plus free shipping. That's right, they'll pick up the shipping, and you pay just $79.99. Use the code OUTLOUD on HealthyCell.com, or just click the banner on the front page of AmericaOutLoud.com.
With me today on Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement,
is an old friend. Well, I don't mean old Karen in that sense. Karen Solomon is the author of several books, including Hearts Beneath the Badge and The Price They Pay. She's a very much an activist in assisting law enforcement. She's got some amazing projects going on, and we're going to talk about them today. Thanks for being on the show.
Hey, Randy. Thanks for having me.
So let's talk about, before we get into some of your major projects now, if you would, just share a little bit with my audience about what it is that got you involved in assisting law enforcement officers in such a way that you have.
Yeah, it's funny, like a lot of things started with the incident in Ferguson, and this kind of started with Ferguson, and it just kind of grew into its own thing. This isn't the path I intended to go down, but it's where I've been led, so to speak, so this is where I'm gone. I initially wrote my first book, Hearts Beneath the Badge, just as a reaction to Ferguson, to kind of thank law enforcement for being there and to not be jerks all the time, because we know they're not. And as I wrote that, I found out more stories about other situations, and then I wrote The Price They Pay, and then it evolved into injured and emotionally and physically injured officers and trying to find ways to help them, and then that just kind of developed into this whole suicide prevention thing, and it's where I've landed, and it's where I think I'm going to stay.
You know, suicide is one of the topics that's very difficult to talk about with law enforcement, but it's becoming more and more an issue. At least it's coming out into the open a little more than it has been. You know, we had that horrible spate of suicides where 11 officers committed suicide within just 13 days, many of them in uniform, and that was very recent. So that this topic is as difficult as it is to bring up with officers, it's vital that we do so and we talk about it.
I agree. And it's interesting because last night I happened to speak to a widow. I tracked the suicides in 2016. And as of January 1st, I had 100 law enforcement suicides and 28 correction suicides. And then, about a month ago, I had 106, and now I'm up to 112 for 2016, because as people are finding out about this project, they are popping up and people are letting me know about them. So this widow that I spoke to last night, I didn't have her husband's suicide until 2 days ago, and she knows other widows. They have kind of a little network. There's just like four or five of them, but they're starting to connect with each other and talk to each other. And she said what they really, really want to do is talk about it so that other officers don't do this, you know, because their families are suffering, they're suffering, and they want people to understand what's happening. Because as you say, we don't talk about it. We talk about the line of duty deaths. We talk about the heart attacks. And I kind of have a problem with that, because if we're talking about heart attacks, they're dying of a heart attack and it counts as a line of duty death, it's a physical illness. Well, depression is a physical illness as well. So is post-traumatic stress. So we should be counting these too. So they really want to get out there and start spreading the word so that people understand the extent of the problem and how they can stop it. And we have to start with the stigma, of course, as you know that. The stigma is a big problem.
Oh, it's huge. It's huge. You know, I was having a conversation with another law enforcement officer. In fact, this individual was on a department honor guard, and one of their officers had committed suicide. And he told me a story that brought me back to my own honor guard days, where there were people in the administration of the department that didn't want to give that officer, who served for something like 20 years, mm-hmm. didn't want to give him the honors that were due him because of the manner of his death. And it really caused some hard feelings and some deep conversation.
I agree. And what I've been saying to people is we always say that we have that saying about their heroes, and it is not how they died that mattered, it is how they lived. And obviously we aren't meaning that for everybody, because if it really is how they lived that mattered and not how they died, we would honor them. We would honor their service. When they serve for that long, I don't really care that they completed suicide. It's not about how they died. They obviously had some kind of problem that we should look into. But the bottom line is, they were police officers, and many of them for 20, 30, 40 years. And you can't just disregard that because of one thing, one judgment, one decision that they made to take their life when things got to be too difficult. I completely disagree with that. I think they should be recognized.
I agree. So tell us about your new project.
Right. So Honor Them is the new project, and this is where we are going to recognize them. It's kind of going to be a cross between Officer Down Memorial and Concerns of Police Survivors. What we're going to do is we're going to have a website, honorthem.net. We have an organization, a 501c3. We have some great people involved. And what we're going to do is we are going to have a page where we have the names and the faces of the people who completed suicide. And it's going to be an honor. We're not glamorizing suicide. We are just recognizing that these men and women served and that they died, and many of them as a result of post-traumatic stress or depression related to their jobs. And there's going to be, you know, there's going to be rules around who can be on the page. For instance, if it's a murder-suicide, we're not going to put their picture on the page, but we are going to count their suicide as in the statistics because we want to keep counting everything. But we're going to honor the service of the ones who did die by suicide. And then we are also going to start providing resources for the survivors' families. We are going to let people know what the resources are before this happens so they can get help. So it's going to kind of be an all-encompassing thing so that we are making sure that everybody knows where to get help before, and God forbid something happens, they know where to get help afterwards. And we're going to educate people and start talking about it, because I truly believe that, you know, the more you talk about it, the less the stigma, you know, the stigma starts to reduce because more people are talking about it and admitting it. And I had said to somebody recently, it's like back in the old days when you used to whisper the word cancer. Nobody would say it out loud. But now we shout it from the rooftops. I have cancer. I'm a cancer survivor. Well, we need to start doing that with this suicide. We need to start talking about depression, post-traumatic stress, and start saying, I survived it. You can too. And really stop whispering about it behind the scenes.
Yeah, you're biting off a mighty big chunk here, and I admire you for it. There are going to be a lot of challenges ahead for you with this, not just the physical challenges of creating an organization, but I can see that when you hit a hot topic like this, and there are so many variable opinions from that, you know, based on religion, based on upbringing, based on where you grew up. I mean, there's just so much here there's just going to be so many challenges for you. And I, you know, I really do admire, you know, your efforts here. Now, what is your organization like? I mean, is it going to be informationally based so that you're pushing out resources and creating studies?
Yes. So we're not out to replace anybody that's already out there. So we are not going to provide mental health, assistance. We are going to say, here's who you can go to for assistance. So for instance, if you go to firsthelp.net, 1sthelp.net, there's a database there. You can key in a few questions with your IRC code, and it will give you some national organizations that are already in existence that are designed just for first responders. So that will give people a starting point so that if the organization they contact can't help them, they will find somebody who can. So we are not going to be providers of any kind of mental health support. We're just going to point people to them. We're going to continue to collect suicide data year over year, and we are going to get help from organizations such as Badge of Life, Wounded Officers Initiative. We're reaching out to everybody to kind of make this a collaborative effort so that we're all getting the same information. So we're not, like I said, we're not going to replace anybody. We're going to publish findings every year for at least 5 years. We are going to point people into the direction of where they should get help, and we are going to work with the families who have suffered through this to find out what we can do for them after the fact to help them. And then finally, and I know it does sound like a lot, we're going to work with departments that have had success with their programs, like the Indianapolis Metro Police Department, with New York PD, what they've done to prevent long-term mental or emotional trauma to their officers and how they've helped them recover. So, and I know it's a tough, I know it's a lot, I know I'm making a lot of pushback, but I really believe that there's a real serious need for this, and regardless of what anybody says, we're just going to have to push through it.
Well, okay, let's go back to that for a second. You talked about Indiana, and you talked about New York. What is it about their programs that you have found so effective?
So there's a lot of people with a lot of different things. So New York, they have an organization called PAPA, and PAPA helps officers who have traumatic events. They even have a program where if an officer needs to get off the street, they will replace him with another officer. And you can't do that in all departments because some of them are too small, but they really have taken a step way above and beyond to help their officers. What Indianapolis Metro Police Department does is they also have a program, and it's the combined peer support with other things, and they've made it so that the officer's identity is protected and they cannot be fired for seeking mental help, even if their identity is revealed. So you've got all these programs out there that are doing things differently and helping people so they can get out there and their jobs are protected. You know, PAPA has a resiliency support program. They have hotlines. There's these great things. Chicago recently got a grant from the Department of Justice, and they are going to use that grant to create an atmosphere and a place for officers where they can decompress after their shift if they need to or to get some assistance. And Indianapolis Metro, they also received a DOJ grant, and they can travel all around the country on the DOJ's dime and train other departments on their program how to protect the officer's career and how to keep them from being fired if they seek help. So it's those kind of things that we know other people are doing, but other people don't know they're doing it, so we want to put them in touch with each other.
That's amazing. I had not heard of that. That sounds like a future guest for my show.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
You know, because you've hit it right on the head, though. There is such a stigma attached, and I often hear when officers reach out to me and they're looking for resources for help, they're scared to death to go to their own departments in a lot of cases because mm-hmm. of not only the social stigma, but they're literally afraid for their jobs.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. They really are. And it's funny because I started hearing people start using the term rubber gun squad again recently. And I haven't heard that in years. You
yeah.
know? But they're talking about that because they're talking about this, you know, emotional trauma that they're suffering. And they are afraid because people will say, you know, we don't want him, you know, with a gun. He's unstable. But he's not unstable. He's traumatized by something he may have experienced or this cumulative trauma. And it's stuff that's curable in most cases. It's treatable. And it's something that they can work through and they can function perfectly fine. You know, we have these CIT teams in place for, you know, the critical incident teams for society. So we have CIT teams where the cops will go out and they will help people that have addictions or whatever, and sometimes they drive them to the methadone clinic, and we're willing to put ourselves out there and help society. But the minute you find out an officer has a problem, you're not driving him to the clinic. You're shooting him out the door. And it's such a double standard, and I get that we're, you know, held to a higher standard and stuff, but at some point, we're all human, and they may break, you know. So, and you've got to fix them and put them back out there. You can't just pretend it didn't happen and shove them back out there, or kick them out the door. You've got to fix them too, you know.
You know, I had a really fascinating conversation just 2 days ago with a group of retired police officers, and many of these were my contemporaries, people that I served with for years, and
old.
They're all a bunch of old guys exactly. And we were sitting around having coffee, and generally speaking, the conversations are fairly, you know, about topics, what's going on in current events and what's happening in the department politically, that kind of thing. And so it's kind of, you know, light stuff. And someone brought up a topic that got everyone speaking about something that I was really shocked to hear, and that was it began so innocuously. We were talking about someone saw a movie and it was a very emotional movie. And another guy said, you know, I can't watch those heavy emotional movies anymore. Mm-hmm. He says, because it feels like all during my career, it was like somebody dripping water into a cup of my emotional cup.
Yeah.
And now he says it's overflowing. And when I see these really heavy emotional movies, he says, I can't deal with it. And here's what's really surprised me, Karen, is that every single officer at that table kind of shyly said, I thought that I was the only one.
Yeah. And I'm not surprised. And that's a great analogy, using that, the dripping into the cup, because that is what's happening. And in addition to collecting the suicide data, there is a place on our website where they can share their PTSI stories. And a lot of them say, you know, one recently submitted a form and he said, I don't know where to start. It's just that I suddenly feel like all these years have caught up with me, you know? So a lot of people are saying that, and they're saying it anonymously, not anonymously, because they put their contact information to me, but it's anonymous to the public. So they feel shielded by it, and they're admitting, yeah. And out of every single form that was submitted with PTSI, one of the questions is, you know, have you sought help? And if not, why? And every single one of them says they're afraid of the stigma. There's 7 choices, and every one of them chooses the stigma as a choice, you know, in addition to other stuff. But it's that whole not being able to admit it. And the problem, too, is, you know, we're not admitting it because we don't think the next guy next to us is going through it, or he doesn't want to admit it. The fact is, he is too. So if you spoke up and said, you know, like you did around the table, my cup's a little full, the next guy's going to go, you know what, mine is too. I'm so glad you said that. You know, there's going to be this, like, this collective sigh of relief where everybody's going to be able to say, you know what, this job is hard. It's really hard.
And, you know, I want to talk real briefly. You and I have both referred to post-traumatic stress injury. You know, it's still in the general vernacular, you hear the term post-traumatic stress disorder, and that's thrown around a lot. And for my listeners, I want to emphasize that post-traumatic stress injury is just that, similar to any other physical injury. It is not a disorder per se. It is it is curable. It is treatable. It is a condition, and it is not a disorder, as harsh as that word is. So, you know, we have to start as a profession, we have to start changing the reference point, because even that word, post-traumatic stress disorder, makes people uncomfortable and includes the stigma inside of it.
Agreed. And, you know, while we're bringing that up, it's funny because, I don't know, I notice it all the time because I've picked up on it because I do it now, is most people don't want you to say committed suicide. They want you to say completed suicide, because commit often is something that we associate with a crime. So they believe that the wording that you choose makes a big difference.
Just that's like interesting. Injury. Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. There's been a lot written about that. But it's the preferred word to use is completed suicide.
That is interesting. I had not heard that. Although, you know, now that you say it, I've heard some people reference it, but I didn't know that there was a movement afoot to change that interpretation.
Yes. And it's because it makes it sound like a crime. You know, they committed suicide. Like, they committed a robbery. They committed a crime.
Yeah, it makes sense. It makes sense. You know, here's another topic that, well, it's basically the same topic, but it's where leadership within law enforcement organizations should be playing such a much larger role than they do, and that is recognizing post-traumatic stress injury as a workers' compensation injury.
Oh, that's a thorn in my side. I can't even tell you. Yeah, I agree. I mean, you know what it's like. You know that so many states don't allow it. The wording they've written into the laws is so that first responders can't get it for post-traumatic stress unless it's accompanied by a significant physical injury. It's madness. It's just, it makes me crazy that, and actually I wrote it somewhere recently. I was writing an article that, you know, if somebody rolls up to the scene of a crime and the guy, my next door neighbor, he drives up, he sees a traumatic accident or something, we expect that guy to be traumatized. And he might take a couple of days off because of it, and he might need to get help because he witnessed something so horrible. But then you have the cop who rolls up to that, or the EMT or the firefighter, and they all are seeing the same thing this other guy sees. But because they're supposed to be doing their job, or it's supposed to be part of their job, or they signed up for it, we don't expect them to experience the same trauma as the guy standing next to him. They don't get a day off. They don't get any benefits. It just makes me crazy because I know so many. I know an officer who stood next to his partner when his partner was shot in the head and died, fell at his feet next to him and died. That officer was also shot 7 times. He can't get workman's comp for the PTSI he suffered because of that incident. Tell me how insane that is.
It's beyond comprehension. And I blame law enforcement leadership for this. You know, you listen to the International Association of Chiefs of Police, the National Sheriff's Association, and they come out with reports and they, you know, white papers and all this. But I'm not seeing any of them stepping up to the plate. And saying, you know, this is the reality. This is as a profession, we must recognize this and we must change it. And yes, call me jaded, but I can't help but believe that it's for selfish reasons. It's based on economics, and based on politics.
And, you know, it's funny because that's part of what's driven me to do some of this is I'm so sick and tired of people publishing statistics and publishing papers and not doing a damn thing with it. So publish your paper till you blue in the face, but until you actually step up with that paper and wave it in somebody's face and make change with it, it means nothing to me, you know? Get out there and do something with it. Whatever risk it is to you, sometimes it's worth it for the greater good. Sometimes it's worth it for the generations that are coming up next. Because seriously, where are they going to be if they can't get help? What if these suicides keep escalating? What if we can't recruit guys? Then where are we going to be? You know?
And you know, here's another part of this problem. When we're talking about workers' comp, police officers get injured in the line of duty. That happens frequently, it happens regularly.
Every day.
And the way that many of these officers are treated by their departments when they get physically injured,
terrible,
leads to the post-traumatic stress injury because they feel, rightly so, that I got hurt in the line of duty. Why am I being treated like some second-class citizen where they reduce my pay, where they send me away to work a desk job and reduce my hours, and it hurts my family. Mm-hmm. And I hear this all the time that they feel like they're being punished for getting hurt.
And I agree. And the thing too, the ones that I really love are when they decide that they don't want the officer back at work and they mail him his retirement papers. That's just fantastic. Thanks for your service. You know, that just drives me nuts also. And that needs to be addressed also. And Wounded Officers Initiative, they are out of Florida. They are starting to work on that. They've been doing this for a few years now, and they're really starting to make some headway, and that's one of their causes. And we're going to be working with them a lot also. And one of
what's the name of that organization?
Wounded Officers Initiative. I'll give you the information after we're done. They're great. Jimmy Brown, he was in one of the Twin Towers when it began to fall on 9/11. He's in Florida now. He runs this organization. He understands. They helped out a lot of people at the Pulse nightclub shooting.
Right.
They're a great, great organization. But they also know, and one of our pet peeves, you know, now that Police Week is coming up, is that the Police Week was written into law to honor the dead and the disabled. The wording is "and the disabled," but we don't do that at Police Week. We don't recognize the disabled. People don't remember that that's the wording of the law. We've taken that out because it's been, for whatever reason, the wording, we're not using the appropriate wording, and that's something that we need to get back to, too. We need to get back to the original intent of Police Week and start thinking about these men and women who are disabled, because you're right, they are treated like second-class citizens, and it's really not fair.
You know, I'll give you a perfect example that just happened to me. I went out on a full disability because I had a stroke in my police car. And it literally was the most frightening thing that ever happened to me in my life.
Oh, sure.
And it discovered that it was from a condition that was work related, and so I was afforded the opportunity to retire with a disability.
Mm-hmm.
Recently, I had some other issues that were concerning that same issue, and when I had to be treated at the hospital, the third-party insurer that is still with the department treated me like I was some type of malingerer, and has refused to pay the bills. And now I have to go through the whole thing all over again, where I have to go to hearings, et cetera, and so forth. And it's maddening.
Yeah. Imagine the guys. There's a guy I know. He had a traumatic brain injury. He taught breaching, so he was out there with bombs and constant. Well, they have these instruments that they use to determine what's the safe distance from the breach when you're doing it. And one of the instruments was broken, and they did not know this instrument was broken. It was provided to them by the FBI. And when they breached one of their doors that day, this officer was too close, and he suffered a traumatic brain injury, career-ending, completely life-altering. Well, his city said, you didn't get that traumatic brain injury at work. You must have had something happen at home.
What?
Yeah, because I'm sure he blows up buildings in his backyard all the time. And he's been fighting for years for benefits. And it's something like that is just makes me nuts. How can you say he didn't get that injury at work? What the hell is he doing on the few hours he has off that he's got a traumatic brain injury? You know, it makes no sense. It's crazy.
You know where it makes sense?
It wasn't so sad. You would just laugh your head
off. No, you're right. You're absolutely right. And unfortunately, I hear this just like you do. I get contacted 2 or 3 times a week with this same exact kind of scenarios. Now, and you know what? It's people like you that are stepping up to the plate, that are committed to doing what you can to aid law enforcement, you're doing this out of the goodness of your heart, and because you have a calling to do that, and that's something that I deeply respect and admire in you.
Thank you. I mean, you're doing the same thing. You just do a different. You know, it's funny because we're all doing something. You know, and it's everybody's doing their own little bit, and it all helps at the end of the day because you know you're out there. I read your posts. I see what you're doing. I see your podcast, your little film clips. I don't even know what they call them. I'm not that savvy. I see your letters to the president. You know what I mean? So you're doing your thing, and we're all choosing to do. We're choosing what we feel most passionate about, and we're going out and we're doing it. And every one of us, we're just these little pegs across the board. We're all going to be tied together eventually, and we're going to be able to make a change because there's so many issues, especially in law enforcement, that need to be dealt with. And we've only got to pick the one that we can address most passionately. You know?
Exactly. So we're kind of running out of time. I want to just remind my listeners, 2 great books by Karen Solomon, The Heart Beneath the Badge and The Price They Pay. And coming soon is her new website where it's going to honor those men and women of law enforcement who have completed suicide. And that is honorthem.net, honorthem.net. And she also has another incredible website, First Help. First Help is a resource for officers that that are seeking help.
Yep.
So once again, I want to thank you so much for being on Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, and for everything that you do, Karen. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
End of watch.
Each week on Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, we pay homage to law enforcement officers who have given their lives in the line of duty. I have one name to read this week. Agent Benjamin De Los Santos Barbosa of the Puerto Rico Police Department in Puerto Rico. Agent Benjamin De Los Santos Barbosa succumbed to a gunshot wound sustained 4 days earlier following a vehicle pursuit in Ponce, Puerto Rico. He and three other officers attempted to stop a vehicle for having illegal window tint. The driver, who was on parole for narcotics charges, led officers on a pursuit until he encountered a broken-down vehicle in the roadway. He then backed into the patrol car and opened fire as he exited his vehicle, striking Agent De Los Santos Barbosa in the head. The other officers, as well as a bystander, returned fire and wounded the subject. The man was taken into custody, charged with 15 counts, including murder, narcotics violations, and weapons. Agent De Los Santos Barbosa remained on life support so that his organs could be donated. He had served with the Puerto Rico Police Department for 5.5 years. He was predeceased by his sister, who also had served with the Puerto Rico Police Department, but was slain in 2010. He survived by his nephew, who he obtained custody of after his sister's murder. We also have the report of another law enforcement officer dying in the line of duty today. A Delaware state trooper was shot and killed in the parking lot of a convenience store, but he has not been identified pending notification of next of kin. Both these officers gave their lives in the line of duty. May they rest in peace. Thank you so much for tuning in to this week's episode of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement. I do appreciate you taking the time and the effort to listen, telling your friends all about it. Now, if you want to find me, go to Facebook and look under Randy Sutton, public figure. If you are a tweeter, I am at LT Randy Sutton. And, of course, my personal website is randylsutton.com. Feel free to contact me there or on Facebook. And don't forget, always check out bluelivesmatter.blue for all the information about the American law enforcement community.